Hello, this is Janie Reisner, and welcome to Women's Voices.
Many are the hearts that are weary, the next step unable to see.
Hello again, this is Janie Reisner. The music that you have been listening to is me, recorded in 1986 at the University of Iowa Recording Studios. Many are the hearts that are weary, the next step unable to see. Many are the hearts that are wondering tonight, wondering what tomorrow will be. It seems to fit for today as well. Thankfully, the song has a positive ending. And may life on earth as well. My guest this evening is Nina Simons, social innovator and co-founder of Bioneers, a national nonprofit that helps highlight, gather, and disseminate breakthrough solutions to our most pressing environmental and social challenges. Since beginning Bioneers in 1990, previously, she was president of Seeds of Change, Nina and partner and husband, Kenny Ossabell, have collaborated to grow the organization and its influence, which now reaches many millions through its annual conferences, satellite conference partners, and award-winning radio series, and much, much more. Every year, the Bioneers Conference draws thousands of people together who are passionate about solutions. Author Terry Tempest Williams writes, "A gathering of inspiration and innovation, Bioneers is creating a community of social change." And Diane Wilson, a fourth-generation fisherman, writes, "Bioneers is my Mecca. I go there to be renewed and watch the magic happen afterwards." This year, Bioneers is being held in San Rafael, California, October 15th through the 17th, with intensives October 14th and 18th. In 2002, Nina produced a retreat for diverse women leaders called Unreasonable Women for the Earth. The gathering served as an incubator, resulting in the formation of Code Pink, Women for Peace. Nina also has an enduring interest in the leadership of women and restoring the feminine to a balanced place in our culture. In 2006, she began offering Cultivating Women's Leadership, a 5-day intensive for diverse women with the passion and capacity to affect change in their communities. Together with her husband, Nina was named an Utney Reader Visionary in 1996. They received the Robert Rodale Award in 2003 for their work in bringing the emergent field of ecological medicine to public awareness. Nina and Kenny received the Green Cross Millennium Award for Community Environmental Leadership in 2006. Nina serves on the board of the David Brower Center. Nina co-edited and wrote the introduction for the newest Bioneers anthology book, Moonrise, The Power of Women Leading from the Heart, which we'll be offering as a premium tonight. Welcome, Nina.
Thank you, Janie. Good to be here.
Thank you. I'm so happy to have you as my guest and grateful that you're taking time out of your extremely busy schedule right now to be here. My first question to my guests, given that this is Women's Voices, is how did your own mother influence you to become the woman that you are today? What part did she play in your growing up?
Oh, it's a wonderful question to ask, Janie, and my mother has influenced me profoundly. in addition to getting some physical gifts from her, like I credit her with giving me my voice, she influenced me growing up because she very early on realized she really had to embark on her own spiritual quest and journey. And although it was rather controversial at the time, and I'm not sure that I understood it then, her actions have served as a beacon for me, and she has both introduced me to really important sources of spiritual learning and modeled for me how to live a life that's guided by passion and serving what we most love and value. And she currently hosts her own radio program called Living Juicy. And so to this day, she models Living Juicy in a way that I'm really grateful for. I think the other thing, Janie, that I really learned from her was to trust the wisdom that lives in my body. She's always been a strong proponent of body awareness, and she's taught Tai Chi for many years and been a dancer. And so I've learned from her that when I get stressed or confused, if I listen to my body never lies.
Mm, lovely. What a gift. How many gifts. You know, it seems to me that you have always had a sense of your life being devoted to service, that you kind of started out that way. Is that true?
Well, it's an interesting question. When I was in college, my first love was theater. And I fell in love with theater because I wanted to do the kind of theater that I called transformational theater. And I saw even then, back in the 70s, that there was a lot that was wrong with the world. And so I do think that I decided to devote myself to theater that could help transform the landscape between people's ears and really cause people to question their own belief systems. Hmm. But then I did some work in professional theater, and I got rapidly disillusioned by how little of it was actually transformational. And so I wound up getting involved with work on behalf of the environment and the people who have solutions for our most pressing challenges, really because of a kind of call that I felt from the natural world. So I do think I've been oriented towards service, and part of my life's journey has involved reconciling what I saw as a disparity between serving my own joy and serving what was needed in the world. And I remember you mentioned the Unreasonable Women for the Earth retreat, which feels so long ago, but I remember at that gathering that I stated my intention as seeking to reconcile the schism I felt inside me between self and service. And I feel like since that time, my great revelation has been that serving what I most love and care most passionately about is the most joyful thing I can imagine to do with myself. And so it's just been this beautiful wedding of that apparent contradiction in really a new understanding of what leadership is and means to me.
Mm, that's wonderful. And it's very touching. And isn't it true that, yes, being devoted to something that has meaning is joyful, absolutely.
Yeah, I find that when I'm doing that work, I feel better used than at any other time in my life, and I get so happy from it.
And I have to say, you seem very grounded in that dedication. I remember hearing your talk on Turning the Tide. That was, I heard it not too long ago, a teleconference.
Uh-huh.
And you spoke so eloquently about making your life count. Feel free to say more about that. I mean, I know that's what you're already saying, but that was, you seemed to come to a really poignant place in your life, and you could really articulate that so beautifully.
Well, I guess what I can share with you, Janie, and with everyone who's listening, is that I reached a point when which I recall really vividly, when I turned 40, which was about 13 years ago, and I knew that I wasn't going to have children in this life, and I made myself a promise on that birthday, and I promised myself very deeply that if I wasn't going to have children, I was going to have myself. And I didn't mean that in any kind of egoic way. I meant it in that I really believed that we're all born for a purpose, and that I needed to find, even though I had been doing great work that was meaningful to a lot of people and certainly was serving needs in the world, it wasn't really aligned with exactly what I felt totally called to do. And so I embarked on a long quest that I kind of think of as a detective story. You know, there's a saying in the Jewish tradition, which is my lineage, that before we're born, our soul knows its purpose. And that then in the course of being born, we forget our purpose. And we spend our lives trying to remember what it was we knew before we were born. And that's what I felt like in that journey that went on for me, principally between the ages of 40 and 50, where I really dove deeply into my inner landscape and into understanding not only what my gifts and skills were, but what most lit me up and what really felt like it was truly mine to do. And so I'm still on that inquiry. I can't say that I've landed and I know. I think part of my own practice has involved that every time I find myself taking a step forward, I remember to get humble and see myself in a larger context. And so I'm very mindful of how many of us are doing how much really great work to change how we live on Earth and with each other. And I must say also that I feel like I've been very privileged to have the benefit of 20 years of Bioneers as my graduate school. And it's really informed me in countless ways. So I feel like I've gotten to be mentored by just hundreds of amazing leaders.
Mm-hmm. I remember hearing Jean Shinoda Boland speaking about the greening of our conversations, and that we, in that process, that we would speak about things that are real, that are deep, the things that weigh on our hearts. And I hear so much of that in your speaking, and that's so very important.
Well, thank you. You know, she's been a really important teacher for me, as has Joanna Macy, and I think something happens when we choose to enter a field that's really authentic and to speak our truths, and we create safety for each other to go there, and I think it That's rekindles right. the light that lives within us yeah. when we're truthful, especially living in a culture that has so much deceit.
That's so true, and I think this is really women's truth that's coming forth as well. Before I go any further, I want to say that you're listening to Women's Voices on KZYX. This is Janie Reisner. I'm here with my guest, Nina Simons, co-founder of Bioneers. How about, shall we talk about Bioneers and also the gift that you have to offer? Who are the keynote speakers and what's going to happen?
Oh, well, you know, as with every year, there are 15 keynote speakers spread over the course of 3 days. And you know, for anyone who's been, they would know that those speakers are all very different, and some of them are well-known, and some of them, we like to say, are the greatest people you've never heard of, because it's part of our great joy to introduce people who aren't known very widely. But I think there are a great many this year, not only plenary speakers, but also a lot of workshops that are really relevant to the work and the inquiry that so many of us are involved in right now. Let's see, there are some extraordinary speakers speaking about a community organizing, a woman who's been one of the leaders of the Gamaliel Foundation, which is the group that initially trained President Barack Obama in community organizing. And her name is Mary Gonzalez, and she's really speaking about the environment and its relationship to equity and the economy. And then there's a fellow I'm really excited to have named John Powell, and he's one of the foremost thinkers and speakers today around the question of how do we reveal the invisible, insidious nature of racial injustice in our culture, because it tends that white privilege gets so normalized in our culture. And he does this in a way that's really loving and insightful and inviting and quite brilliant. And then there are some folks that are better known, like, Jane Goodall. I grew up with Jane Goodall being one of my sheroes and really learning about her work with the apes and just being completely mesmerized by her immersion into the reality of primatology and the plight of the gorillas and their extraordinary capacities as social creatures and what that taught us about ourselves. So we'll have Jane Goodall, which we're excited about, and Lynn Twist, who many folks may know through the Pachamama Alliance. She's been a mover and shaker around money and the soul of money and teaching fundraising. But in recent years, she's really been focused very much on the Pachamama Alliance, which not only raises money, but also really works closely with indigenous peoples to preserve rainforests in their lands. Mm. And gosh.
That's so important.
I mean, there's so many. So John Francis, many folks may know him. He's a fellow who became known as the Planet Walker. He's actually a National Geographic Fellow, and in the early 70s, after he witnessed the devastating effects of an oil spill in San Francisco Bay, he gave up using motorized vehicles. And he first stopped driving and walked everywhere. And then he took an even more radical step, and he took a vow of silence that lasted 17 years.
Oh, my goodness.
During which time he took a pilgrimage by foot across America and earned a PhD in environmental studies. So he's a remarkable human being doing amazing work. And there's one other I just want to mention, because he's sort of a local hero, I think, to many, and I'm really excited about what he's doing and its applicability to many of our communities. Peter Warshall is a guy many folks may be aware of. He, for many years, he was kind of served as the mayor of Bolinas, and then subsequent to that time, he was the editor of Whole Earth, a remarkable magazine, started out as Coevolution Quarterly. And he's a very brilliant guy who's really a systems thinker and ecologist. And he's been working with my husband and partner, Kenny, on a project that they've called Dreaming New Mexico. And Dreaming New Mexico is really based on the premise that as activists, we tend to be so focused on what we're against that we rarely get really clear about the dream, the vision of what are we working towards. And so he's going to be offering his talk this year and a workshop about their recent work re-envisioning a local food shed, the age of local food sheds. And he's going to be talking about how they can translate that methodology to be of use in any county or community anywhere to reimagine what a local food system really looks like so that we can effectively take the steps to get there.
Can you say any more about that? I mean, can you? What would that look like? I'm curious.
Well, yeah, me too. I can tell you some of what I've experienced through working with them here is that a lot of what they do is they start out doing a whole bunch of research to really understand a phrase that Peter's called the local agroecology. And a lot of what he determined, for instance, is that, you know, oftentimes our counties and municipalities are divided by arbitrary lines. And in fact, they should be divided according to their watersheds and their grow zones and how the agroecology makes them each different, right? So,
yeah.
So that's been some of their work, but then they've done a collaborative process working with leaders and grassroots folks from all over the state to really flesh out what might a local food system look like. And some of what they've been realizing, for instance, is that there are some states, like in Montana, where they've actually put into state law incentives so that the state institutions are incentivized to buy local and organic foods. And in New Mexico, the state purchases 10% of the food of the whole state. So if you switch that policy, you immediately can help transform the food system.
Mm.
And then if you begin to incentivize growers so that they're not only getting supported for growing foods that the local people actually want to eat, but for taking care of their ecoregion as well, for doing things that support wildlife and the health of the soil and the health of the watershed, then you wind up really engaging people in a community-based process that can restore the ecology while providing local food self-sufficiency.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I think of New Mexico as being very dry.
Well, it is, but it's got very different regions, you know. And so, for instance, the northern region tends to be the wettest, where I live up in Santa Fe and Taos. But there are southern parts of the state where they have a great deal of geothermal energy. And so a lot of what they're looking at is, for instance, you could be doing greenhouse growing that's actually heated year-round by geothermal heat, right? So it really involves just understanding what are the resources that exist in your state or in your municipality. What are some of the assets and the hindrances that you're going to encounter? And then given all that, how can you imagine what the ideal scenario might look like?
Well, of course, growing food is very very prominent in this area, and a lot of it goes on. And organic food. So
yeah.
Then you also, James Hansen is going to be there.
That's right. James Hansen, who was really the first climate scientist to recognize how serious climate change really was. In many ways, he helped motivate the founding of Bioneers when he testified before Congress in 1989. So it's exciting to have him. And then we have a whole plethora of amazing women leaders, because women's leadership is a really important and central theme to our conference. And we have an indigenous forum that is at the heart of the conference. So there's additional programming and a whole raft of Native peoples from many, many different tribal cultures who'll be joining us.
How exciting. Are they mostly women or not? That
you mean the indigenous folks?
Yes.
No, they're everybody.
I see. Well, lovely. And Gloria Felt is going to be there?
Gloria Felt is going to be here, and she's somebody I just met in the last year, and she was the head of the National Planned Parenthood for many, many years, and then stopped working with them really to develop her own voice and translate some of her learning into tools for women's leadership. Mm-hmm. And so she has a new book out, and she's going to be speaking about how we as women can shift our relationship to conflict as a means of strengthening our own capacity for leadership.
Wonderful. Sounds right up your alley, too.
Well, yes, it is. and we do have a special offer that I want to offer to anyone who's listening, which is that we're really mindful that these are tough economic times and that there are a lot of you who are very active players in this work and who could benefit greatly from being there, because part of what happens at Bioneers is that it's a networking smorgasbord. I mean, it's just a remarkable opportunity to connect with all kinds of folks. And so we wanted to offer everyone a $50 discount on any registration package that you can find on our website. So that's applicable to whether it's 1 day theater pass or a 1 day grounds pass or 2 days or 3 days. We can't offer a discount to the intensives, the wraparound things. But anything on the core 3 days of the conference, if people register online and use the promotional code Women's Voices, all in capitals, then you can get a $50 discount, and we'd love to see you there.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you. That's just great. It's almost 7:30. This is KZYX. You're listening to Women's Voices. This is Janie Reisner. I'm here with my guest, Nina Simons. Well, shall we move on to your Cultivating Women's Leadership Training? I've heard you talk about your discovery of what held you back initially, how you initially saw yourself as a woman in relationship to men, especially, and to your husband, and how that has shifted.
Well, you know, I mean, there are two things related to your question, Janie. One was that you know, soon after I started that inquiry around age 40, one of the things that I noticed was that there was this disparity between how other people saw me and how I saw myself. And, you know, as you mentioned in your very generous intro, I was getting awards for the work I was doing with Bioneers and with Seeds of Change, but especially with Bioneers. And I was getting awards for my leadership, but I didn't feel like a leader. I just felt like I was putting one foot in front of the other and doing the best I knew how. And I thought, well, this is interesting. You know, what's that about? And the more, then I discovered I was given an assignment to write the story of my relationship with Bioneers. And when I did that, what I discovered was that I had a story that I was basically supporting my husband Kenny's vision, and that I saw myself as the woman behind the man. And once I saw that I had written that, it actually gave me the opportunity to take a step back from it and realize that it was only my story, that it wasn't his story, and it wasn't the way anybody else saw me. And so I had this shocking revelation that I felt like I held the keys to my own liberation, you know, and I began a process of sort of reclaiming myself and realizing that many of the contributions that I had made and continue to make to Bioneers, because they tend to fall in the artistic or aesthetic or relational realms, I tended to value them less than the linear or intellectual contributions that Kenny made. And so I started discovering that I had my own internal judge that was sitting in judgment of myself and causing me to show up in the world in a way that was smaller than I really wanted to. So that discovery was really big for me. And then I started discovering, I would start sharing some of the things that I was realizing with other women around me. And I found that every time I was telling a story, there'd be women around me shaking their heads. And I began to wonder whether my own learning might have use value for other women. And as I became increasingly convinced of that, I actually contacted another woman who I knew, who was a very skillful workshop leader and facilitator, and asked her if she would partner with me to create a women's leadership training.
Somewhere in there, you also saw the burning times.
Yes.
That seems pivotal.
Well, you're right. It was pivotal. It was a long time ago. It was about 15 years ago, and I saw the burning times, which anyone can see online. All you have to do is Google it. And it's about an hour-long film that was made in the early 90s by a Canadian woman filmmaker.
Donna Reed.
Donna Reed, exactly. And she tells the story of the 300 to 500-year period in European history where, depending which historian you believe, somewhere between 50,000 and up to 9 million women were tortured and burned for the crime of being witches. And until I saw that film, I had no idea of how huge a historic event that was and how many countries it impacted and how many hundreds of years, how many generations of children lived through seeing their mothers persecuted and tortured and burned.
Yeah.
And I remember when I saw it, Janie, I thought, I don't know whether I believe in reincarnation for sure or not, but I did know somewhere deep in my bones that that history was alive in me and that I carried its legacy.
Yeah.
And I think we all do.
We do. I'm sure we do.
Yeah.
I'm sure we do.
And it led me to believe, you know, seeing that film just completely altered my worldview, because for the first time, all of the challenges and hardship and imbalances that I knew about through Bioneers suddenly had this unifying principle, which was that they were all marked by an imbalance of those human qualities we associate with the masculine versus those we associate with the feminine. And I began to understand that we have this chronic undervaluing of the feminine in our culture, and that one of the ways we can really transform how we live on Earth and with each other is to shift that within ourselves.
Lovely. We will open up the phone lines around 7:40. Telephone number is 707-937-5103. Before that, I want to hear if what you're doing with the training now and what's happening and what's going on.
Well, we offer the training about three times a year now. And we offer it once in Sonoma and twice in New Mexico. And each time about 20 women are selected by application to come and take the training with us. And it's a very deep immersion into that has several purposes. It's really about helping everyone clarify their own sense of purpose or calling. And it's also about exploring the nature of shared leadership and how we can improve our capacity to connect and collaborate across differences. So we gather women for the training with a very clear racial justice lens, and we seek to have 30% women of color at any training that we do, because we really feel like we're in the process of transitioning the complexion of our whole nation. And that racial injustice tends to be so invisible, as I mentioned earlier, and so the wounds from it are so deep that I think we as women have an opportunity to help lead the way in how we heal them by transforming it in ourselves and with each other. And so the women who come really have an opportunity to go very deep with a remarkable community of women peers and women who are differing by age and differing by background and by ethnicity and even by issue area, and experience just how profoundly and dramatically we have the capacity as women to strengthen each other. So, you know, we love the training. What we started this year for the first time was a Cultivating Women's Leadership 2 training. So we now have one advanced training a year that we invite women who've taken the first level training to apply for. And we're looking at many, many ways to translate the learning from those trainings into tools and resources and communications so that they can benefit a lot more women very widely. And we'll be doing a panel at this year's Bioneers, actually, to look at that.
Oh, you will?
Oh, yes.
I was wondering, what are the women, some of the women that have taken that training, they go back to their own communities, and what happens?
Well, many of them stay connected with many of the women that they take the training with. It's kind of remarkable how deeply those connections can be formed in 5 or 6 days. And
I'm sure it can be wonderful.
Yeah, it can. And there's a group of women in Northern California who actually have been through an initiation ceremony with each other and call ourselves the comadres. And they continue to meet. There's a recent group that's talking about having a book study guide with each other. But what women report basically after they've taken the training, it's very interesting, Janie, because different women seem to get very different things out of it, depending on what needs they come with. And so women report a deeper trust in themselves, a greater capacity to bring more of themselves into their leadership and not have their leadership style be defined by such a sort of masculine or unconscious view of what's acceptable and useful. Women are finding themselves strengthened in many, many ways. And a lot of our purpose is also to have every woman come away with tools and practices that she can continue to use in the ongoing cultivation of her own leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think part of the new definition of leadership is that it's not something that, you know, only a privileged few can do, actually. I think we are at a time that calls us all into leadership.
That's absolutely true.
And I don't think it's something that you just achieve and then you're done. I hope to be working on mine till the day I die.
Well, yes, absolutely. And given the state of the world, we all do need to be doing it. And I suspect we'll be doing it for a while.
I do too.
How do people find out about it? And economically, I think I've understood that you make it available to people across an economic spectrum. Is that
well,
true?
We do. It's always a challenge. People can find out about it on our website or by sending an email to women@bioneers.org. And we'll also have information about it at the conference. And you know, the actual cost of each training is about $1,450 per woman. And what we're doing is we raise scholarship support so that we can offer some scholarship assistance to women, though we do prioritize that for women of color and women from the region, because we're really trying to build nodes of women leaders in certain regions and strengthen the opportunities for women of color leaders as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, it's a both and. And, you know, part of what's really lovely is that some of our graduates are actually referring wonderful women to come. And so the quality of women who are applying keeps getting better and better. And some of them are donating money to help support other women to be able to have the experience.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So How about wanting to register for Bioneers? Where do they go to do that? Where do we go?
Well, go to www.bioneers.org, and if you go to the conference page, you'll find all the registration info there. And just to be specific with folks, with respect to the cost, like a one-day rate for a grounds pass is $95, which means that with the $50 discount, you can buy a day pass for $45. So we're hoping that makes it accessible to many more folks, because we really, it's just such a really rich bounty of learning and connection that's there, that we, you know, we do it as a service, and we want to have all the great folks who can come.
Let's open up the phone lines and also start talking about your book, Moonrise, which is so wonderful, so appropriate. It's such a clever, I mean, wonderful title. Did you just think about how did it evolve?
Well, I have to confess, my husband is the namer in my family.
I see.
So he came up with the wonderful name of Bioneers, which is short for Biological Pioneers. And when I was ruminating with him over the title, he suggested Moonrise. So it's, you know, we happen to be blessed with a really amazing yin-yang collaboration, he and I. And so that was his idea.
Oh, it's so perfect.
And, you know, he's actually been a really wonderful mentor for me in many ways. And he actually suggested that I do this book before I had much enthusiasm for it. And I think, you know, what he saw before I even did was that in the course of programming great women leaders over the last 12 or 15 years of Bioneers, I've learned a lot. And he said, look, you know, if you look back over all those transcripts and really let them filter through you, it'll help you distill your own learning. And he was right, you know. And I really went into it with a question, which was, I realized, Janie, that part of what happens at Bioneers is that we gather leaders from very diverse backgrounds. And some of them, you know, they come from all different issue areas and from different generations. And so I realized I had an opportunity to really look at the leadership landscape in a much more varied way than most people get to. And so I was really curious about, with this emergence of women leading that's happening in many places around the world, are we changing what leadership looks like?
Which sounds wonderful.
You know, thankfully, I get to marry all these streams of learning in myself, and I think the book is a product of that.
In your book, in the preface you write, this book is dedicated to everyone who has ever felt powerless or experienced being the dissenting or minority voice. It is intended for anyone who has experienced a culture that elevates some while denigrating others. As women in a society that privileges attributes and people who are masculine, I believe we all have a particular empathic window on injustice.
Well, I think that's true. Thanks for reading that.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's kind of dangerous territory to compare wounds of oppression. And yet, I think we are all alive at a moment where cultivating our empathic ability to stand in another's shoes is profoundly important. And I also, it's worth saying that there are three men included in the book. You know, the book is a book of stories, of women really telling their stories in a very personal voice. And I realized that it was terribly important to me, even though the book is titled the way that it is, to include some men in there, because there are men integrating the feminine in with their leadership style in profound and beautiful ways.
That's true.
And really, this is a call to all of us, not just to women.
Absolutely. And we have a call. Hi, you're on Women's Voices.
Hi, Janie. Hi, Nina. It's Thais.
Oh, hello, Thais.
How are you?
How wonderful to hear you.
Well, I love what you're doing. I just think it's fantastic. And my daughter, who's 10, she and I were sitting here and listening, and just, you know, there's just so many issues. I'm listening to it and thinking, Gosh, this is so exciting. And I wondered if you knew anything about this new term, Nina, called compassion fatigue. Just kind of the idea that we're all sort of running out of gas. There's so many issues out there. You know, a lot of people are just getting tired.
Yeah.
And not clear on which way to turn.
I want to thank you for being one of my mentors as well, and for, you know, including me in a book that I felt totally honored to be a part of. So thank you.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. But just what do you have to say about that kind of regenerative, we need to do to keep regenerating our will and our compassion to move
and
forward?
And our batteries. No, I couldn't. I think it's a really important question, and I think part of the fatigue comes from not taking care of ourselves adequately. You know, I think that on some level, part of the wounding that we all carry from this cultural legacy of violence is that we who feel called to serve tend to serve at the sacrifice of ourselves. And so, you know, one of the things I find from the women's leadership courses that I've been teaching is that most of us don't actually stay connected to ourselves enough, because we're so busy serving what's out there and all that calls to us. And I think...
Sounds like the way of the mother.
Well...
It can be,
yes,
anyway.
Yes, but thankfully even mothers have their children get older and eventually need them a little less.
Right.
Whereas I'm not sure that's true with the world. You know? So
I
think, I mean, for me, I'm in a constant practice of checking in about how am I feeding myself?
Yes.
And, you know, both not just physically, but emotionally, spiritually, creatively. Uh-huh. And what parts of me aren't getting fed? Because it's very easy to ignore parts of ourselves in a time when things are moving so fast and so much is asked of us. But I also think that, you know, Joanna Macy's work has been really important to me recently, in that I think that we don't often allow ourselves to feel quite as deeply as we really do.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find for myself is that when I can create both my own inner permission and the circumstances that support me in having a good cry periodically about the state of the world or the children in Haiti or the creatures mm-hmm. in the Gulf or the walruses stranding in the Arctic, you know, it actually replenishes me in a way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a similar way, if we don't feel our despair, you know, I know that for myself anyway, as a woman, one of my journeys is to find my way toward a healthy relationship with anger, because I think mm-hmm. anger is a really appropriate response. And I know for me, I basically buried it a long time ago, thinking it was just unuseful.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, there's a lot to be outraged about. And I find that in a way, you know, the more deeply I can feel my despair and my outrage, in a way it seems counterintuitive, but it actually strengthens my energetic capacity to feel joy and to keep choosing
yeah.
when and how to bring myself to the world.
Yeah. Thank you, Thais. Oh,
thank you, Nina. Thank you for all your beautiful work.
Oh, you too, Thais. Thanks to your daughter.
It was so good to hear you say all of that. It is so important, I think, to feel our feelings and to feel outrage. There is so much to be outraged about. We're just seeing the desecration of life on Earth.
You know, I think another important piece, Janie, which I know you know, is that there's an old saying, I think it may even be an indigenous saying, that no one can take your power away, only you can give it away.
Hmm.
And I think that's a really important piece for us to reclaim and remember.
Mm-hmm.
Because so often in this world where so much seems, you know, so many of the problems we're facing seem so huge and overwhelming, and because we don't claim our own authority, we don't often take as clear a stand
right.
as we might.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think there's another piece which is also in response to Thais's question, which is I'm trying to do what Bill McKibben calls cultivating a romance of limits. You know, he says, in a culture that celebrates bigness in a way that is so unhealthy, we need to learn from nature that nature operates within limits. And part of what that means is we can't bring ourselves to everything. We have to actually exercise our discernment and choose what's the best match for our passion and our energy and our life force at this time. And it means saying no, you know, which is hard. Feels increasingly necessary to me.
Yes. Who are some of the contributors to your book?
Oh, gosh, there are incredible contributors in the book.
And here we go. Excuse me, we have a phone call.
Okay.
hello there. You're on Women's Voices.
Oh, I'm honored to be. Hello, this is Acorn.
Hi, huh? Acorn.
Hello. I had this simpleness insight that I thought I might share. It's kind of apropos with the what do you do with burnout, which I realized that a key is hope, that when people have hope, they're willing to make the right-on choice, the healthy one. And it's when they lose hope that they're willing to take the abuser choice and do something, you know, justified for their own needs or that of their family or their country or something. And that the special part of our generation, which we've gifted to the planet, has been the gifting of such huge heart and hope. So I'm so glad we're doing it together. Thanks.
That's beautiful, Acorn.
Thank you.
Thank you. It reminds me, I mean, you know, people often ask me, knowing as much bad news as I know, how I can be hopeful. And honestly, I feel like I exercise the awareness all the time that we're in a moment of huge transformation where there's a lot that's dying and there's also a lot being born. Mm-hmm. And we all have the opportunity to choose at every moment where we put our attention. And if we put our attention and our time and our energy into helping the new world be born, it increases our capacity for hopefulness.
Yeah. Okay, we have 5 minutes, 4 minutes. So who's in the book?
Oh, who's in the book? Let's see. Well, there are about 40 people in the book. Jean Shinoda Bolen's in it, and Joanna Macy and Alice Walker. And Terry Tempest Williams was generous enough to write a beautiful foreword for the book. And Julia Butterfly Hill, I'm sure many folks there know.
Yes.
And Anna LaPay and Frances Moore LaPay.
Great.
And Jodi Evans, who's one of the founders of Code Pink, and an extraordinary woman named Lily Yeh. And if people have never heard of her, they may want to look her up on YouTube, because I think her talk at Bioneers is up there. And she's using art to heal the broken places in the world. And Rachel Naomi Remen and Jeanette Armstrong and Kat Harrison, many people there may know also, Kathleen Harrison, Judy Wicks, Kathy LeMay. So it's and Janine Benyus and Eve Ensler are in the book.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so it's a great, great group.
Yes, it sounds like a wonderful book. So if anyone is interested in getting this for a pledge of $100, we'll get a startup on the coming up pledge drive. Please call after the show, and I will take your name and number, and the number is 937-5103. If you're out of the area, it's 707-937-5103. Well, how lovely.
Well, Janie, I also want to say thank you for doing Women's Voices, and thank you all out there for supporting independent radio, because it's so important at this time. You know, with the centralization of media, we need these voices. So I'm really honored to be visiting with you. Thank you.
Yes, yes, we do. Thank you. It's mutual, I assure you. It's just lovely to have you. And to hear all the things that are going on in Bioneers. Of course, Bioneers is a very inspiring event.
Well, I hope to see a lot more folks there this year, so come on down.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that you actually had a Beaming Bioneers conference that was useful to the community there in Casper.
We did. It was very fun. It really was. We were all very excited to see that big screen, and Jack Todd, is that correct?
John Todd.
John Todd, mm-hmm. Yes, I remember seeing him. And it was a number of years ago,
mm-hmm.
but we were delighted to have it there. It was a gift.
Yeah. Well, it's a great community you live in.
It is. We are fortunate to live in this little bit of paradise on the northern coast of California. It's for sure. And you're in Santa Fe.
I am.
And that's beautiful, too.
Oh, yes. I'm very blessed to live here.
Yes, you are. It's time to say goodbye. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Janie, and thanks all for listening. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Calling as never before, the truth and the light will fill up the dark.